Hi, everybody. We are live. Welcome. It's been a really long time, and it's so, so nice to see everybody, Baruch Hashem. So we were in the middle of Perek Daled when we left off, so I'm going to do a brief synopsis, and then hopefully we'll be able to finish Perek Daled today. I do want to say we have class today, obviously, and then next week, Be'ezras Hashem, and then after that, we'll be continuing after Sukkos. So just planting those seeds, so as you know. Okay. I want to welcome a special guest. My daughter Chana Bracha Kalmanson is in the shir today, and I'm so blessed to have her to listen in. Such a bracha. Thank you, Mrs. Wolf, for making lunch, and Rabbi Wolf for carrying cold water on such a hot day for all of us to enjoy. We should only experience overwhelming brachas and revealed good. Water is a simon bracha. Okay, so let us learn. What are we learning about? So far we have dove into the Tanya. The Tanya is a book by the Alter Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi. And this incredible book is supposedly a sefer that is going to help us get closer to Hashem, right? We had learned the title page. The title page is all about helping us understand the purpose of this book. The purpose of this book is for us to understand in our own Aveda, how are we supposed to serve Hashem with love and fear? How are we supposed to attain this level of deep connection with Hashem? So Perek Daled actually begins discussing that question, because we're really going to dive into it further. But up until Perek Daled, we've been making sure that we understand all the different terms that the Alter Rebbe is going to be using. We make sure to lay the groundwork that we're both using the same kinds of verbiage. And the Alter Rebbe says, let's first talk about who you are at your core. Before we start talking about your Avida and what you're going to do and how you're going to be able to attain this easily, it's going to be accessible to you. First, let's talk about you. And he takes the person and he breaks it down and says, you are two operating systems. You have two operating systems inside you. You have the Nefesh Elokis, the godly soul operating system, and you have the Nefesh Bahamas, the animal soul operating system. And they're both fully functional operating systems. And they're both vying for control over you, this person who is trying to just live your life in this world. And those two operating systems are always saying, hey, I want it. I want this body. I want to be the one to tell you what to do. So if you ever feel like you're confused or you feel unsettled or you're experiencing a little bit of anxiety because you feel displaced, that's your natural experience, okay? And we spoke earlier, and I love saying it because I think it's really important, the differences in the character traits of the Nefesh Elokis and the Nefesh Bahamas. So the character traits of the Nefesh Bahamas are: it experiences superficiality. That's what it is. It's superficial. It doesn't dive deep. It just goes with what it sees, okay? So it's all about the shell. It's all about the outer layer. It doesn't go deeper than that. As such, it doesn't recognize Hashem. It doesn't search for the beyond. And because of that, it is always experiencing anxiety. It's always worried. It's always afraid. The Nefesh Bahamas lives with a big question mark inside of it. Right? So I don't know if you've ever met someone like this. I definitely know some people like this, i.e. myself, who will look to the rest of the world and say, well, at least I'm really good at this, right? At least I'm, I know this really well. I know how to, I am very smart in this area. I know this with my children. I'm the one who's really good at sports, or I'm the one who's really good at art, right? And we lean on those things and we try to define ourselves by those things because that's going to boost our confidence and make us feel a little bit more settled and grounded in the world. The Nefesh Bahamas is constantly doing that. That's the voice of the Nefesh Bahamas. Why? Because it places its value on external things. It doesn't understand the Nefesh Elokis's experience, which is absolute value. You don't have to do anything to attain value. You are. You're perfect the way you are, because you have a piece of Hashem inside of you, and that is what gives you absolute value. Nothing you can do can change it. So you're good at art, so you're bad at math. It doesn't matter. It doesn't change. It doesn't detract or add onto who you are and your value. Okay? So the Nefesh Elokis's experience and its character traits are go deep, go beyond the shell. It has absolute recognition of Hashem. That's all he sees. The Nefesh Elokis is constantly only seeing Eibishter in its life. It's not going to see the desk and say, oh, that's a desk. It's going to say, oh, there's a spark of God within this desk that's keeping it alive at every single moment. And the Nefesh Elokis, one of its character traits, is a sense of calm. it's always okay because Hashem is holding it. Hashem is cradling it in its arms at every given moment. It doesn't have to worry. It doesn't have to be afraid that something bad is going to happen because it knows that Hashem is ruling the world and taking care of it at every given moment. It doesn't have to justify its existence because it knows that Hashem is its existence. So he doesn't have to justify it or try to find value elsewhere, okay? So now we know that we have these two operating systems, the Nefesh HaLukis and the Nefesh HaBahamas' operating system. Beautiful. Last class, we learned about the Nefesh HaLukis and how the Nefesh HaLukis has something really special. It has something called begadim, clothes, okay? What are these begadim? It is your thought, speech, and action. Now for the Nefesh HaLukis, because the Nefesh HaLukis is solely focused on God, these thought, speech, and action are the thought, speech, and action of Torah and Mitzvahs, right? If I'm engaging, God forbid, in a sin, I wouldn't say that the thought, speech, and action of my Nefesh HaLukis has engaged in that sin, right? That would be the thought, speech, and action of the Nefesh HaBahamas. Perek Daled is talking about the thought, speech, and action of the Nefesh HaLukis and how special they are and how incredibly elevated they are. And the Altareva is going to go through like almost like a system of thoughts to explain to you how incredible the experience is knowing that you have these begadim, that you have thought, speech, and action of Torah and Mitzvahs and what that does to elevate you as a person. Okay? Everyone with me? Okay, so last class we had spoken about the mashal of begadim and how thought, speech, and action are like clothes and why that mashal is very apropos and it makes sense. We take on and off our clothes, right? Our clothes are not us, but they are an expression of us. They're not necessarily important because they're not you, but they are still something that gives you shape, right? When you put something on, it gives you a form. So we spoke about the relevance of the nimshal to this mashal. We don't have to go into it again. I just wanted to plant it, okay? So the Alter Rebbe says something incredible now, okay? And this is going to harken back to the whole reason why we're talking about Nefesh HaLukis and the Machshava Dibur Meiser, the thought, speech, and action, the begadim. The Alter Rebbe says, ki ahava, because love, hi sheresh kol ramach mitzvahs aseh. Ahava, love, is the origin of all the 248 mitzvahs. Okay, that's so interesting. Love is the origin of the 248 mitzvahs. What does that even mean? What does it mean that love is the origin of the 248 mitzvahs? Now we know that the 248 mitzvahs are the positive commands and the 365 are the negative prohibitive mitzvahs, okay? So what does it mean that love is the source for these 248 mitzvahs? So I've shared this, I probably share this almost every single class. You know the Mifzayim trick, right? The story with any bachur who's going on Mifzayim, what does he do when it comes to Mifzayim with Lulav and Esrog on Sukkos? Sukkos is coming up, you'll see. A boy will take his Lulav and Esrog and he's going to all the street corners. He'll go to the Grove, he'll go to any of the malls, and he'll say, are you Jewish? Do you want to shake Lulav and Esrog, right? And some people will comply and they'll be very excited and they'll make the bracha and they will shake it and they will feel good. And that's beautiful. Now there's some people who are not interested whatsoever in a mitzvah. They're even offended that you thought that they were Jewish. Is there something wrong with my nose? And they say, no, I am not. I do not. Leave me alone. So then what will the boy do? The trick. He says, oh, okay, fine. Can you just do me a favor for a second? Can you just hold them while I tie my shoe? And he'll bend to tie his shoe while the man hold, or the woman holds the lulav and esrog. Why? Because the act of holding the lulav and esrog, and while he's holding it, probably his hands will move a little bit, is the act of the mitzvah of shaking a lulav and esrog. Did he make a bracha? No. Did she have an intention to do that mitzvah? No. But actually she was, or he was absolutely against doing the mitzvah, would not do it. But because they physically did the action, the mitzvah counts, right? So why are we talking about that? Because even if you didn't have the intention, even if you're not excited about the mitzvah, does it count? Yes, it counts, right? And that's a very important thing to talk about. But in this perek, we're going to actually be focused much more on the deeper aspect of the mitzvah, okay? How do you know if you have genuinely fulfilled the mitzvah? If after you did it, you say, would I have been happier if I didn't do it? If I didn't have to do it? Would it be a relief if I didn't have to do this mitzvah? Right? So technically, in the story of the man or woman in the grove who had to hold it just because it was thrust upon them and they by mistake did the mitzvah, are they happier not having done the mitzvah? Yes. They didn't want to do it to begin with. Do we all have certain mitzvahs in our lives that we'd be fine if we didn't have to do them? Let's be honest. Yes, there for sure are mitzvahs that it would be much easier if I didn't have to fulfill that mitzvah. I'd be fine without it, okay? Now, the fact that you still do it means that you're doing the mitzvah. But here the Alter Rebbe wants to show you how to genuinely fulfill a mitzvah with kavana. Again, the whole intention here is to give our avaida ava and yira, to infuse our connection with Hashem with something a little bit more than just doing it by mistake. So what does that mean? It means that if I'm doing the mitzvah, am I genuinely in it? Am I invested? Am I excited? Is there passion? Or am I like watching from the outside, from the cold, kind of like witnessing myself do the mitzvah? What is it like? Which one is it? So let's talk about it, right? If we all know what it looks like to have kavana, to be passionate, we've all experienced some form of excitement when doing a mitzvah. What does that look like? You're passionate, you're excited, you're invested, you're thrilled, you're detail-oriented about it. Let's give a mashal, right? Imagine a child. I remember when I was a kid, I remember trying to get something from my mother. I think it was like either for Mother's Day or a birthday party. And there was a tremendous amount of investment in it. I thought that she liked this certain kind of flower that was like a fake stem. It's fake, okay? A fake stem with like this porcelain flower at the top of it. My mother had one and I thought maybe she would want more. So I found out the place where I could get something like that. I called a grandmother, I called an aunt, and I figured out how to get them. And I don't know how I sent them the money because there was no Venmo, there was no Zelle. The point is I was really invested. I was so excited. And guess what? 30 years later, I still look at that little bouquet and I think, wow, I was really into that. Like that to me looks like I was passionate about that gift. It wasn't just, I have to do this, let me buy a card in CVS and just scribble something in and give it to her. I really went through effort, right? So if we were to take that mashal for a second and apply it to a mitzvah, we do certain mitzvahs because we have to, we just do it, right? Just do it. And there are other mitzvahs that we are actually super invested in and we care about the details and we're invested in it. And there's almost like a pleasure, a joy in getting involved in that mitzvah. There's a very big difference between the two. Yes? Okay. So imagine that bouquet of flowers. That bouquet of flowers was not just something that was an expression of my love to my mother. The bouquet of flowers itself was born from the love that I was experiencing for my mother, which means that the bouquet itself is symbolic of love. It is love. It's not just I did something and now there was intention in it and then it itself is nothing. The intention is carrying the actual experience. The intention is carrying the actual physical act. The flowers are still there. When I look at the flowers on my mother's piano, I see them, I see love. When she looks at them, I would imagine still she sees love. Why is that important? Because what we're trying to bring here is the understanding that the 248 positive commandments are sourced, their origin is love. Right? We're trying to understand, we're trying to answer that question. How are 248 mitzvahs, how is their source love? Well, when I do an act coming from a place of really being passionate and invested and taking all of myself and putting myself into that mitzvah, then yes, it is very much sourced in love. And the mitzvah itself is an act of love. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, that makes sense because the Alter Rebbe then proceeds to explain mitzvahs, the 248 commandments, as a hug. And he repeatedly describes it as Hashem hugging us, Hashem hugging Bnei Israel. Every time we do a mitzvah, what we're doing is we're experiencing a hug from Hashem. He's enveloping us and we are enveloping him. Okay? So here's like, stay with me because it's a whole series of thoughts to help understand the greatness of what's happening when we invest ourselves in a mitzvah. Let's go to the opposite for a second and we'll come back to it. What about the 365 prohibitive commands? Right? Are those also born from love? So the answer is no. Those are born from fear. What does that mean? Why are we bringing fear into the picture? Usually fear gets us worried. Why does our relationship even have to have something like fear? Why do we want to serve Hashem from fear? That doesn't feel good. I don't like that. So let's talk about what the kind of fear that we're talking about here. When we talk about fear, we're talking about the dread of not wanting to rebel against Hashem, the King of all kings. We don't want to do something that the Melech Malchei Amlachim is not going to approve of. We don't want to do something that he doesn't want us to do. Or on a deeper level, a more intimate level of fear, we wouldn't want to experience the shame, not the shame that we think about, which is unhealthy shame, but the smallness of doing something that he considers evil. That's almost like the embarrassment of engaging in something that the Lord of all, right, the creator of the entire world, considers something that is evil. Let's take it a little bit more deeply, right? Let's give a mashal. Imagine you tell your child, don't eat that. That lollipop, that red lollipop, I don't want you to eat that. So the child complies and listens and doesn't eat it, but they still want it, right? They deeply want it. It's actually funny. I was watching a video with my daughter last night. There's a music video by Avram Fried. It's actually interesting. He just put out a song, I'm guessing, and it's all about shtus. Okay, so what's the video? Avram Fried's in the video, and he's surrounded by all this candy, which is a representation of the shtus. What's shtus? It's all the negativity, all the klipa, all the not good things in your life that we engage with, okay? And he's running away from it, and he's jumping off walls to get away from it, and it's running after him, and he's running after it, and it's a whole hectic story, right? So that's the first level of Yiras Hashem. You're told, don't do this. And you say, okay, I won't, but I really wanna, right? I still want it. I really want it. A deeper level of Yiras Hashem would be contemplating on the fact that Hashem, who is the creator of the entire world, who maintains every single tiny detail of this world, keeps it in creation, preserves it at every given moment, he's recreating me to be exactly the person that I was, and at the same time leaves me open to grow and to be even greater than I am, creates this miracle and all the other miracles I witness every single day. He's the one who's doing all of that, and yet he cares about this little tiny thing that I could do in my bedroom and nobody else will know. The creator of the entire world cares about me and doesn't want me to engage with evil. And with that deep understanding, now I don't want to engage with evil, right? So back to the mashal. The child who you tell, don't eat that candy, don't engage with that shtus, but I still want to, right? I won't, but I still want to. As opposed to, let's say, a grown-up who looks at the red lollipop and knows all the research about red dye and has read all the scientific articles and knows what sugar is going to do to you, looks at the lollipop and says, oh, I don't even want that. That's so not something I even want to engage with. It's an informed decision to align yourself with Hashem, right? It's a maturity. It's an understanding of, I don't want to connect with something that he doesn't want to connect with. I understand that anything that he doesn't want, the creator of the entire world doesn't want for me, I think I also shouldn't want that. Right? Do you hear how there's, it's a much more mature, much more informed decision to not engage with the shtus, the externality, the whatever it is, the temptation. Okay? Why is that important? Because then you can understand that the 365 commandments that we are commanded to not do, those are sourced in Yira. Not Yira like fear, like this superficial fear, but a deep understanding, a dread, an informed awareness of, I don't want to detach from him. I don't want to be involved with anything that is not him, that he abhors. I only want to be connected with him and what he likes and what he enjoys and what he thinks is right. That's a much more mature understanding of those 365 commands. I remember one time I was eating leftovers. Okay, this is a funny thing. But I was eating leftovers, and the person who I was with, I don't even remember who it was like, why are you eating that? You're not a garbage can. Very extreme language, true. But what was she trying to say? She was trying to say, look at yourself and see your worthiness. See your greatness. See who you are. Don't put something bad into your mouth that you're not worthy of. You're better than that. Right? So it's the same thing. It's kind of like a more negative way of looking at it. But the idea is that when we are able to engage with Yira from a very mature space, instead of feeling like a child where I just have to do whatever my mommy and tati tell me and I really don't like it and I don't want to do it and I actually really want to, right? Instead, you're coming from a place of really understanding the greatness of who Hashem is and really the greatness of who you are, because Hashem cares about your every little action. So it's almost like this bird's eye view of your greatness as well. Not trying to say, you know, look at yourself and say you're not a garbage can. Instead say, look at me and I am great. Hashem cares about me and what I engage with. It impacts me and he cares. So from that place, I don't want to. I distance myself. So it's not fear like I'm sweating and I'm afraid. It's fear that I dislike. I don't want to engage. I'd rather not. No, thank you. I'd rather engage with what I want to engage with, what he wants me to engage with. Now, this leads us to the next question in this parak, which is, what does it mean to have a relationship with the Yavishter? I know we're jumping, but like keep with me. It's really a series of thought. What does it mean to have a relationship with the Yavishter? Hashem is infinite. That's like saying you, this tiny little human being, or for example, how about this is more relevant? You can have a relationship with a mosquito. Most people will think that's ridiculous, right? How am I supposed to have a relationship with a mosquito? I mean, you could have a symbiotic relationship with a mosquito where she bites you, takes your blood, and that's the relationship. But the idea is, you know, the relationship that people think of dogs, let's say a dog with an owner, man's best friend, that kind of relationship, they don't think that you can have that with a mosquito, right? Hashem is beyond, be'en areich, right? Beyond, he is infinite.
What about when we kill the mosquito?
Then that's a different kind of relationship, right? The idea is that when you bring the concept of infinite, there's no way that we can actually relate to Hashem, right? Think about distance. When you talk about infinite, right? One city block and 10,000 miles are equally separate and distant from infinite. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. It's all infinite. Think about a tzaddik versus a toddler. Their relationship with Hashem, it's all equally non-existent. There's no way for any of us, when we are finite, to have a relationship with Hashem, who is the infinite. How is that even possible, right? So the Alter Rebbe gives us a mashal to help us understand how this is possible. And he says that the Torah, okay, stay with me because I'm gonna tie it all together, okay? The Torah is like water. Many times we've given the mashal of Torah being like light. It fills the room, even a little bit of light breaks away the darkness. We've spoken about that. But there's a very big difference between light and water. Light, think of the light of the sun. When the sun is shining brightly and the beautiful rays come down into this room, are you experiencing the sun? No, you're experiencing the energy of the sun. You're experiencing the expression of the sun. The sun is 93 million miles away. You're not experiencing sun. You're experiencing the filtered down, safe concept of light. Difference with water. we recently traveled and we went to a waterfall. And we all, there's like literally thousands of people on this hike, all went to see this beautiful waterfall. It's beautiful. What's special about water? Water, when it's flowing, even when it's flowing from a very high place, and you could go to Iguazu in Brazil, you could go to, what's it called in New York? Angel Falls in Africa. You could go to any of these falls that are thousands of feet high. The water is coming from on top and it's descending all the way to the bottom, and it hasn't decreased. It hasn't filtered off like light from the sun, right? You're not experiencing the actual sun, you're experiencing the light of the sun. The water, you're experiencing the actual water. It flowed down. It didn't decrease. It didn't filter off. It didn't leave some of itself behind. It's there. It came. The Alter Rebbe takes that mashal and that aspect of the mashal for Torah and says, Torah in this world is like water. It's not an expression of God. It is Hashem investing himself completely in Torah. And so when we engage with Torah, what we're doing is we're not engaging with like a filtered off expression of Hashem, where his light has been diluted and diluted and diluted, and finally it reaches us down into this world. What we're experiencing is it in its source. That's what Torah is. That's what mitzvahs are. Hashem in his source. The source material. That's what Torah is. Why is that important? Because like we said in the example before, in the question before, how is it possible for us to relate to the infinite? The answer to that is that Hashem chose. Hashem chose to invest himself, all of him, into Torah and mitzvahs so that we can have a relationship with him. Without Torah and mitzvahs, we wouldn't be able to have a relationship with him. It would be us trying to engage with the infinite. How is it possible for a finite being to engage with the infinite? There's no way, unless the infinite being has chosen to engage with us. There's a story of David Stauber. I read this story in Zvi Freeman's book on the Tanya. And he says that David Stauber, when he was growing up, there was a lot of that kind of simple relationship with Torah and mitzvahs. Do this, don't do this. Hashem said, just do it, right? And for him, it kind of trickled off as he got older. He couldn't understand, what is Hashem care? What is Hashem care that I don't eat meat with milk? What does Hashem care that I wash specifically like this? Why is Hashem so invested in all these silly details, right? So slowly but surely, it came to be that David Stauber only fasted on Yom Kippur. And somehow, for some reason, it also came to be that one day he was taking his parents to meet the Rebbe. Somehow it was organized. I don't know the details of what it is, but he's entering into a yechidus, a private audience with the Rebbe. And the way it works is, with a private audience with the Rebbe, the people who are entering would write it's called a tzetel, like a note to the Rebbe, and they would hand it to the Rebbe without speaking. The Rebbe would read it, and then the conversation would ensue. So he wrote down in this note, I don't understand why Hashem cares. Like, why is he so invested in all the little details? And the Rebbe takes the tzetel, reads it, looks straight at him, and it says, it's not for him, it's for you. And David Stauber later explains the story, how this experience was like, suddenly he was in a room that was completely dark and someone flipped on the switch. It's not that Hashem cares about all these tiny little details for him. He did this for us so that we, finite beings in a finite world, in a materialistic, superficial world, can have a way to engage with the infinite, that we have a way to connect with him. He gave this to us as a gift of engagement, of connection. If he hadn't invested himself like water from a high place to a low place in the Torah, in mitzvahs, there'd be no way for us to connect with the infinite. He gave this to us as a gift so that we can engage, so that we can connect. Now, if you take this concept, right, and you understand what this means, it's actually mind-blowing. It means that when a three-year-old is learning about Yaakov and Esav fighting in their mother's womb, right, the story of Yaakov and Esav in Rivka's stomach and they're fighting with each other and Rivka doesn't know what's going on. Random story in the Bible, right? Them learning that story is them experiencing the infinite God. They are touching the infinite. They are engaging with the infinite. To the same extent as a bachur learning in yeshiva in Lakewood, or a Rosh Yeshiva teaching a shir in Lakewood, or a Talmud Chacham experiencing Torah. It's the same, it's equidistant, because Hashem invested it for us. And His infinite self is there no matter how great you are in reaching Him. This is a mind-blowing concept when it comes to Chassidus. Because if you'll remember, the way the Baal Shem Tov brought Chassidus into the world, if you'll remember that time period, the Torah scholars were everything. And the simple folk were nothing. What did the Baal Shem Tov do? He looked at the simple folk and he said, when you say Baruch Hashem, when you say the words of Tehillim, just because that's the only Torah you know by heart, you're engaging with God in the same way that I am engaging with God, the leader of the generation. You're touching infinite just like I'm touching infinite. Why? Because it's not dependent on my investment or my greatness. It's dependent on how Hashem gave that to us as a gift. So the mashal that... It's not dependent on how great or how special I am, right? The three-year-old in preschool is engaging with infinite, with God, in the same way that the leader of the generation is, in this way. It's the same hug, right? So what's the mashal? Imagine a princess, right? This beautiful little princess. Her father is the king. She's a little girl. She flits and she floats and she dances through the gardens, and then she comes to her father, and all she knows is this is her father. As opposed to the villagers, as opposed to the advisors, the other lords that come to the table of the king. They have absolute deference for the king. They're shaking in his presence. They're not chummy-chummy with him. They're not friendly. They're terrified of him, right? There's no real relationship with him because they see the difference between themselves and him. He's so much greater than them, right? As opposed to this little princess who, when she runs into her father's arms and he gives her a hug, he's father, he's king, he's him. Doesn't matter if he's wearing pajamas, doesn't matter if he's wearing velvet robes, doesn't matter if he's on his royal throne, or if he's in his innermost chambers, or if he's putting her to sleep. It's all the same, right? That's the gift that Hashem gives to us, that we, as Am Yisrael, we're given Torah mitzvahs. We have this way to engage with Him. It doesn't matter who we are, right? The mashal is slightly faulty because the advisors and the lords, they actually think that they are a little different from the king, right? They could see the distance. Our distance, there is no distance between us and Hashem. There's no distance between infinite and finite. There's no comparison. But in this mashal, you could see that when you get stuck in yourself and where you stand and where the king stands, that's where you're getting stuck. You're experiencing a lack of connection, a lack of closeness, as opposed to the simpleton daughter, right? The princess, all she's experiencing is connection, because it doesn't matter who she is. It matters what he's given her, which is their relationship. And the relationship that Hashem has given to us is Torah and Mitzvahs. So every time we engage with our thought, speech, and action of our Nefesh Elokis, the thought, speech, and action of Torah and Mitzvahs, what we are doing is we are experiencing a hug from the Eibishter. It is an absolute act of love, right? A hug is not just an expression of love, it's love. It's an experience of love. And when we're doing that mitzvah, and we're doing it from a place of recognizing that this is me connecting with Hashem, then what we're doing is we're performing that Torah, and that we're learning that Torah, or performing that mitzvah, coming from a place of, I'm seeing what's happening here. Either way, it's happening, right? Either way, Hashem is hugging you. The difference is when we're invested and we're passionate and we're detail-oriented about the mitzvah, then what's happening is we're hugging him back. Either way, he's there. He's always holding us. But when we're actually having intention and kavana, when we're performing Torah and mitzvahs, then what we're doing is we're looking up and we're feeling him hug us, and we're deepening the hug by saying, I know, I see the gift that you've given me, the gift of connection to the beyond, to the infinite. Thank you, Hashem. I deeply care. I love you so much, and I'm afraid of disconnecting from you. And that's what Torah and mitzvahs are. So what is our conclusion here? Okay, whole of Perek Dalet is the understanding that we have thought, speech, and action, and those thought, speech, and action of Torah and mitzvahs actually allow us to experience something so much greater than what our neshama could do by itself. Because our neshama is experiencing its own experience. Yes, it's one with Hashem, but it's also separated from Hashem. The thought, speech, and action of the neshama allow it to reunite with Hashem, to feel completely encompassed and invested in this experience, in this relationship, in this connection. What else are we realizing and seeing? That it's important for us to invest ourselves in these Torah and mitzvahs. It's not just enough to do it. It's actually funny because I got this AI picture, someone was sending it around the WhatsApps. It's a picture of a shofar, which looks like that, right? And on the bottom it says, just do it, right? Like the Nike advertisement, just do it, just do it. Right, but the idea is, it's actually don't just do it, or don't just do it. The message that we should actually be taking into Rosh Hashanah is don't just do it, actually invest yourself, care about it. Do one little thing more that will make this mitzvah or learning this Torah a little more special for you. Even just when you say a bracha before you're about to eat something, just think for a second that the creator of the world gave this specific strawberry to me. Thank you, Hashem. Just a little bit more. You're already saying that when you say the bracha, right? Or when you're, I don't know, davening a speech, right? Thought would be the intention. Actions, I don't know, you're giving tzedakah. When you give that tzedakah, just put a little bit more effort into it. Do it in a way that you're giving dignity to the other person. When someone comes to your door and is collecting tzedakah, offer them a drink. Be a little bit warmer than you would be. Whatever it is, take that mitzvah and make it a little bit more yours. And in that way, you're hugging Hashem back instead of just always being encompassed in his love. In that way, you're investing yourself in the relationship that he has gifted to you. It's always there. It just matters whether or not we're going to recognize it and invest ourselves back into it. So with this, with Perek Daled, we start understanding how we can engage in that avaida coming from love and fear. Now, we also said on the title page that this is very accessible to you. That's the larger question. How is it so easy? How is it so accessible? Now I see it's a gift. Beautiful. Still doesn't feel easy, right? The voice of, I still wanna, right, is still coming up for me. So that's going to be the rest of the Tanya. We're going to continue with the other prakim, how to work with all the challenges that come up with our investment, us deepening the hug. But this is important for us to lay the foundation with. The fact that you have thought, speech, and action, the fact that you have garments to your nefesh l'kis, your soul, gives you the ability to touch the infinite. That you have. And it's always accessible. Now we just have to figure out how to do it practically in our day-to-day lives. What are we going to do today? Which mitzvah are we going to do today? Whether it's a positive command or in a way a negative command where we're stepping away from something, how can we do it with a little bit more investment, a little bit more care, passion, intention, seeing the Avishter and saying, I want you. I'm choosing you. Okay? Have a beautiful, beautiful day, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for being here.